You are now listening to the Legends Lingo Podcast. Here's your hosts, Al, Powder, and Maddie B.
All right, everybody, welcome back in Legends Lingo Podcast, episode 241, presented as always by studentunionsports.com. Make sure to check out everything on studentunionsports.com, all the daily blogs, the weekly podcasts, from the Chasers podcast to the Yellow Card podcast, Is It Saturday Yet podcast, and every other podcast on the network. I'm here. Powder is not here. He had some things to take care of. Matty B is back for another week, whether we want him here or not.
Woohoo.
I mean,
I was here for like 20 minutes last week, and then my internet was like, we'll stop working.
Yeah, hopefully you figured out how to plug it in this week. So
I did. I plugged it in and out and then back in.
Good. We are joined by a third co-host tonight. If you're watching this on the actual watchable version of this podcast, you're familiar with him. He was a former co-host. Now he's doing his thing with Chris Jones on the Chasers podcast to get you all your gambling needs that you need in a week and will hopefully help me win some money tonight. It's Fiesta. He's back. Tom Satham with the set back in the building. Round of applause for Fiesta being back on. Fiesta, long time, no talk. First of all, how
long? I haven't seen you since the 150th. I think that was last year. That was last year. Yeah. But I'm good. I mean, we're neighbors. We're under the same Soon Union umbrella. So it's like, I know, I know Jones is doing a lot of stuff with differently, you know, and all that other stuff. So, We're excited. I know that we've been very hot this September with football. Hopefully that continues with football and playoffs for baseball in the upcoming seasons for hockey and basketball. But I'm good. I'm good overall.
So good. We're glad to hear that. So again, if you have a gambling itch and you want to make a little extra money, unlike Matty B, because he's just weird about it for some reason, then you can go to the Chasers podcast and you can listen to all of their picks and see if you can win. Maybe you fade, maybe you follow, but if you follow, you're probably better off. Just saying. Follow them. Don't fade them. Unless they're really cold, then fade them. But otherwise, follow. And make sure you give that.
We're hot. Like, not like scorching, but we're positive every weekend.
So positive every weekend. Positive money in the pockets. We love making a profit. So that's great. So again, make sure to go check out Chasers Podcast on all podcast platforms. Fiesta, you're the guest. We have some Patriots stuff we got to attend to. We have some Red Sox stuff, and we have some Celtic stuff. What do you want to talk about first?
I think we got to talk about that
dumpster fire.
Specifically the Cowboys game, just in general, just this dumpster fire so far this season.
Oh, we're going to get into it, friend. We'll get into it, friend. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. All right. So we'll talk about the game real quick because there wasn't a lot to talk about this game. Well, there is, but we're not going to get into all of it right now. Patriots week four get blown out by the Dallas Cowboys 38-3. And the weird thing is in this game, boys, the Patriots were down 3-0 in the first quarter at the Dallas right around the 11-yard line, give or take. And they had a chance to go for it on 4th-and-1. They kicked the field goal. And then after that, everything just went straight downhill. Terrible across the board. The defense wasn't too terrible, but they didn't have a typical Patriots game. You lose two defensive starters and Christian Gonzalez with a shoulder injury and Matthew Judon with a bicep tear injury. They're looking at being out for an indefinite amount of time. So that's obviously a huge loss. But just kind of opening take on this, this game has a lot of fans that are really struggling right now. And it's understandable, right? Because you get blown out, you're 1-3, and you're not looking very competitive against a high-level team. Is Dallas good? Yes. Are they 38-3 good? I really don't think so. I think they're a good NFC team, and I think that you can make a case for them to be in the thick of things, especially for the playoffs this year. But I thought this game was going to be more competitive. Matty B, credit to you. You called the blowout. I will give you credit on that one. So credit to you. Take your one bow because that's about the only time I'll ever give you any credit for anything. But again, this game was ugly to watch, and we have bigger things to talk about coming out of this game, but I'll kind of let you guys get your little two cents in on the game. Fiesta, you're the guest, so we'll let you go first. Then I want to hear from Maddie. So, Fiesta, floor is yours.
Then the failed push quarterback sneak, and then you had all these injuries. It just piled up, and then it's just like Mac Jones just looked like a not good quarterback throwing across the field, not looking comfortable. I mean, they got the stats that showed it out. 50% of the time, Mac Jones was under pressure. 50% of the time, he dropped back. That's ridiculous. I mean, and Dallas didn't even score that much. It's like they were kicking field goals. They were. So there's nothing else. It was just a dumpster fire. It is the worst. I would say this. It is the worst Belichick era loss, but it's probably one of the worst losses. It is probably the worst loss. And that's going on for 30 years. And that's saying something. It's like that. Like, this is a generation of Patriot fans, like our age, maybe a little older, that are experiencing this. I mean, my dad texted me and said, yeah, I haven't experienced this or something since 1990. It's like, it's been that long where you just see them just get no effort. And also, I will say this, that when they kicked the field goal late in that game, attempted that field goal to get to 6 points, was absolutely embarrassing. That was, I think, you know, we could go more into detail with that. But there were just so many things that went wrong and so many things that were just embarrassing that we hinted it off air. There's so many questions going forward, and there's not enough
answers. Sidney or Burnett?
Where do I start here? Well, I mean, the Cowboys had an advantage in this game. They had 12 men on the field whenever Mac Jones took the field for the Patriots because, you know, he was ready just to give the ball right back to them, basically, multiple times. I've said this before. I'll say it again. It's year three. Why are we throwing across the body? Why are we throwing across the body across the field? How are we not feeling pressure from behind you when you're literally running away from a guy? God, I mean, it's tough to really evaluate what we saw in this game because we didn't really see much good. Anyways, I could write a novel about everything that went wrong in this game. I think the three of us could, and we'd all somehow come up with something different. That's how bad this game was. It's hard to trust this team right now. It's hard to trust that they can win. Looking ahead at their schedule, I see two wins based off of what I've seen so far. I see two more wins this year. That's really it. This is embarrassing. You could barely beat the Jets last week, and now here you are. I can't even find the end zone against the Cowboys, who I even told you, Al, the beginning of the year, the Cowboys are good. The second December hits, they don't know what a football looks like. I think it's also time to start looking at the coaching staff as well. Time to point the finger at Belichick. It's time. Time to hold him responsible for some of these coaching decisions that he's making. I'm going to say it too. Time to point at Belichick as the GM of this team too. It's time for a new one. You have a 71-year-old GM who is stuck in his own way, who signing guys for cheap and then later on giving them extensions. Why not go out, especially with the cap space that you're going to have next year, go out, address the offensive line, because that's what the Chiefs did when they had that problem against the Bucs in the Super Bowl. They addressed their offensive line, and all of a sudden, they looked great again the following season. And you know what? I'm going to say it. Maybe time to look at another quarterback, too. I'm not going to say he's the problem, Mac, because I don't think he's the problem, but just some of these throws that he's making. Get another quarterback to put a fire under his ass. That I think that's why. You can't have Bailey Zappi and goddamn Will Greer. You can't. Because Mac knows he's better than both of them. Get a quarterback that can actually give Mac a competition.
Okay. So a lot to unpack there, right? Let me ask you guys this. So I'm not going to lie. The 1-3 start is not totally unexpected, I don't think. Because you look at their schedule, right? Philly, defending NFC champs. Obviously, Miami has a high-powered offense. The Jets are the Jets, and we were anticipating they were going to be with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. And Dallas, again, are the September Super Bowl champions because they play well in September and October. Then they start to fade as the season goes along. I was hoping for 2-2. I think you could have been 2-2, especially that Philly game was extremely winnable and you add the ball to go, you were going down the field and if Kayshon Booty keeps his second foot in, then maybe we're talking about a 2-2 record. Maybe they score on that drive the way they're playing that day. But obviously that's not the case. They're 1-3. I think they're heading a little bit toward an easier part of their schedule because they're playing New Orleans next week, which we're going to preview in a few minutes. They're going to be playing the Raiders in Las Vegas, and we know how much of a dumpster fire Josh McDaniels has basically had there. Yes, you have the Bills and the Dolphins back-to-back weeks. That's a tough stretch. But then after that, you still have the Colts that you have to play, the Commanders you have to play, the Giants who can't score. I think they're having a harder time scoring than the Patriots. So there's games there that I think you can win. I do think there are games that you can win. But right now, let me ask you guys this. With the 1-3 record, if you had to pick one area of blame, who are you putting the most blame on for this slow start? Are you putting it on Mac Jones? Are you putting it on Belichick? Are you putting it on O'Brien, the offensive line? Who's to blame for this start? And I want to hear from you guys first before I give you my thoughts. So, Maddie, I'll start with you this time real quick. Who's to blame for this?
God, I mean, like, obviously I'm going to go to the offensive side of the ball here. God, that's tough because I'm going to say it. I saw this today. I'm going to point the finger at Adrian Clem. I am. The offensive line is horrendous right now. Mac has no time to throw the ball. Can't get the running game going. But even when Mac also does have time to throw the ball, he sometimes makes stupid mistakes that he shall be making in year three. But the offensive line, it's tough to get anything going on offense if you can't block well. And Adrian Clem, it's just I'm wondering, what has he done with them for them to look this bad? What happened? Yes, there's injuries, but still, Michael Owenu with, what, 3 bad penalties? That's not like him, but still. It's just you can guarantee it, our offensive line getting a couple stupid penalties here and there every week that they shouldn't be getting. So I'm gonna play Adrian Clem in the offensive line.
Okay, so Matt's got Adrian Clem in the O line. Fiesta, who are you blaming?
Bill Belichick, the GM, and Bill Belichick, the coach. Everything, all roads lead Bill back to Bill. The offensive, despite getting a new offensive line coach, bringing back Bill O'Brien, they didn't address the O-line this offseason. They didn't. They literally was passed. They literally said, here's duct tape, and let's see if this holds. They didn't do enough this offseason to get weapons when there were weapons to be made. It's like they didn't pony up enough money to get DeAndre Hopkins. I know that he's having a slow start. They made the decision to go Juju over Jacoby Myers, be biting them in the ass as we speak. Along with that, it's just the weapons talk. You can make arguments with Mac Jones. And again, Mac Jones, it's a neutral thing. He's a neutral quarterback. He's not helping you or losing your games, but you don't have enough of a dynamic offense. And it's a legitimate problem for this. So it is Bill Belichick. He can't build an offense. He can't go out there and get the weapon or, like, try to, like, put a premium on. He can build a defense for sure. I mean, if you look at the defense, it all started breaking down with injuries. It's a very good defense. It has good personnel. It's just offensively, he can't do it. And it's left you in a vacuum where it is. So that's the GM. And the coaching part, it's like they haven't been prepared. It seems like they haven't been prepared in these games. They've had slow starts. I mean, the Philly game, slow start. Miami, slow start. I mean, even the Jets game, they've had slow starts. They're going backwards in points scored. They scored 20 week 1, 17 week 2, 15 and 3. That's not supposed to happen. That's not progress. Usually, like, you always hear, well, it's extended training camp in September. You're only by week 4, you're supposed to see something. I mean, and also they've had 3 straight 1-3 starts. It's like there's no progress. And it's been basically the same group. So it's just like, Matt said it best, it's time to talk about the Belichick and have a serious examination.
You know what? You're bold and you're brave, and I respect that, because guess what? Not a lot of people would say Bill Belichick. Not a lot of people would say that, truthfully, because you have...
People need to wake up.
I know. They do. They do. And you know what? If I could get rid of Bill Belichick, the GM part, then yes, I would do it too. The coach part, I mean...
I think that we're at this stage, and I'm sorry to cut you off.
You're good.
That he's 71. He's been in this position for a long time. He's not relinquishing GM power. You have to just get rid of him. And either that's forced retirement or you trade him. Here's the thing, and I'm sorry that this is developing opinion. Robert Kraft won't fire him. He'll force him to retire, but he won't fire him. The reason why he won't is because Kraft is in the he's in the back chapter of his ownership. He is getting in his 80s. Putting the humanity factor into it. He doesn't want his final chapter to be, all right, I let Tom Brady walk out the door and pick Bill Belichick, and then less than 5 years later, I got to push Bill Belichick out the door. That's a horrible ending to a pretty great legacy for what he's done in the New England area in the last three decades. That's where it's like, all right, so does Jonathan have to just say, you know what, enough's enough. I'll be the bad guy here and just say, Dad, you need to need to take a step back. Bill, thank you for your services, but you need to go. It's like one of those moments. And I think Patriots fans need to wake up. It's like, it's Bill. And it's like, because you're looking at some of these other teams that we used to laugh at. And it's like, oh, yeah, they have better roster structure than you. So
they do. And you know what? Just to add on to your point, you have the next head coach in training. You have Gerard Mayo ready to go. You have Gerard Mayo, a guy that I know he's defensive as far as to play defense. We know that. But guess what? I think that he's kind of learned enough and kind of sees the landscape of the NFL now where it's like, okay, he steps in. I would feel comfortable if they announced tomorrow that Gerard Mayo would be the head coach. I would be comfortable with that. Now, as far as who I'm blaming, I'm going to go to someone that Fiesta said in that whole tirade about Belichick. Where's Bill O'Brien in on this? Because Bill O'Brien, I was big on Bill O'Brien coming here. I'm like, you know what? He utilized the two tight end system with Gronk and Hernandez back in 2011. You had Hunter Henry. You brought in Mike Gesicki. I thought, great. Be able to utilize it. You should have a good run game. Great, right? You should be able to have that. Like Fiesta said, you've gone downhill in terms of points. You're averaging 13.75 points a game, under 14 points a game in the NFL. You're averaging under 2 touchdowns a game. It looked okay against Philly. The offense was like, okay, we see some signs here. This could be better. You are averaging the first 4 games less than you did last year with Matt Patricia as your OC. That's embarrassing. It is. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It is embarrassing so far. Have you played some good defenses? Sure. Jets, pretty good defense. Eagles, really good defensive line. Excuse me. Cowboys, I know they had some injuries and stuff, but guess what? Pretty good defense as well. I know you've played good defenses, but you should be able to move the ball. And again, it's the same thing as last season. Shooting yourself in the foot, bad penalties, bad turnovers in the red zone, making bad play calls. I mean, the 4th-and-1 tush-push, like with Mac Jones basically flailing on the ground like he's doing the worm. Like, why are we making these calls? And by the way, with Bill O'Brien and Maddie, let me know if I'm overstepping something here. But the play calling is so predictable at this point. It's like you don't throw the ball twice in a row. You get a first down on a throw. You throw the ball like 14, 15 yards, automatically goes right to the run. And it's every single time you go right to the run. I understand you're wanting to establish the run to set up the play action. But if the play action's working and you're playing a secondary that's not that great, why wouldn't you try to keep throwing the ball just a little bit more just to get that unpredictability factor in there? That's my problem.
I forgot another point.
Go ahead.
I have another point, too, in a second to go off of O'Brien.
But okay. Fiesta, and then
why are we playing Pop Douglas more?
I know.
Like literally
after the catch.
I mean, you saw it on the first drive. It's like he got open, made a spin move, and you're like, okay, he's gonna have a big day. Nope. Same thing after the fumble in the Miami game. It's like, yeah, punish him for a quarter, then bring him back out there. It's like I don't know. No, though, I wouldn't blame O'Brien completely. He should get some blame because the play designs are better. It's just you don't have the personnel.
That's fair to say, too.
because you know, because there's times where they're moving the football and it looks like a competent NFL offense, and it's just like other times it's just like you don't have the person, but it's like it kind of goes hand in hand. It's like they're trying, but they don't have the right.
Right, which goes back to Belichick, like you said. But yes, and you're right about the personnel. The personnel is not great on offense, but with what you have, again, I said this to Maddie, and I know you stepped out for a second to do whatever, but don't call a run after every single first down, like pass that you get for a first down or first down in general that you have. Like, give me a break. That's the part that bugs me. But listen, again, it's the first month of the season. They're about where I expected them to be. I didn't expect them to get blown out by the Cowboys. I thought it would be a little more competitive than it was. But here we are. Maddie, did I interrupt you from saying your point? Go ahead if you.
So, Bill O'Brien, so far through 4 weeks, the Patriots have either had a turnover or have punted on 71% of their snaps so far through 4 weeks. That obviously is the most in the NFL. Right behind them is another struggling offense, Pittsburgh. But still, another thing I'm wondering too, which why aren't we playing? I know he had that problem week one, but why aren't we playing Kayshon Booty? Like, why is he a healthy scratch every week? Like, why?
I have an answer for that.
One last thing, Fiesta. The reason why I'm not going after Bill O'Brien yet. I want to see what he does with Tyquan Thornton. If he does absolutely nothing with Tyquan Thornton, then it's time to go after him. Because, you know, Thornton is supposed to be your deep threat guy who, you know, obviously can't stay healthy, but still, he's supposed to be your deep threat guy. When he comes back, if he comes back, let's see what Bill O'Brien does with him. And then the other thing, too, one last thing. I promise this is the last thing. Why aren't we trying to build a running offense in a passing league? Like, what? Makes no sense to me either, but go ahead, Fiesta.
Well, I would say for the Booty thing is that I just think he's too raw. They should be playing Pop Douglas more in that sense because I think he's just more NFL polish. But I would say that he should be active instead of a healthy scratch. I think they have to try. They're trying to get Juju involved, but they're not doing it. It's like,
let's do it right.
I don't know what's going on. It really feels and the thing is, you know, who's also been very disappointing this year. Even despite that old line play, where's Mondre Stevens?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Because he was good with the outside. And it just hasn't happened. It looks like a dumpster fire. It's like a dumpster fire. And I know that some people, there was comments that this easy part of the schedule. Honestly, if they don't win on Sunday, because I know we're going to talk about it, if they don't win, a tailspin's going to happen. It's like, it's on the horizon. It's not like, oh, it's not. No, it's like, a tailspin's happening. It's on the horizon. They don't figure it out.
All right, let's flush this Cowboys game out of us. It's done. It's over with. Talked about the negative. Let's get into next week, week five. At home against the New Orleans Saints. One positive that you can take out so far, Derek Carr playing with an AC joint. He's banged up. I know he played on Sunday, but obviously that's something to kind of monitor. I know Alvin Kamara's back. It's going to be his second game off his suspension, and I know you have Chris Olave, and Michael Thomas. Obviously there's some offensive weapons there. How's their defense? I feel like New Orleans' defense is pretty solid, but they're not like, I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like they're not a top 10 level defense. I could be wrong on that.
No, they're very good defense.
Very good defense. Okay.
But their offense has been mid too.
Right. Right. So here's the thing, right? So you're playing a similar version of the Patriots, right? The Patriots are almost playing the Patriots. It's not as bad, but you have an offense that's struggling. You have a defense that supposedly is very, very good. And I forgot that they were actually good a couple years ago, so I don't know why I said they weren't good. So hand up, that's on me. But again, this feels like this should be a game where this is your season. I believe this game is your season. Because if you win that game, you go up to 2-3, you're like, all right, we're going to Vegas next week. Vegas not that great so far this year. McDaniels, again, having another slow start. And then if you win that game, obviously, then you're 3-3. Then you're starting to be like, okay, the tides are turning a little bit before you get into Buffalo and Miami. But if you lose this game, go to 1-4, let me ask you guys this before we do our full preview of the Saints game. They lose on Sunday. Are you embracing the tank? The tank in 2023?
I'm kind of already embracing it now. It's like, again, even if they win on Sunday, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be like the Jets game, kind of in that way. Saints can't really move the ball. They have a lot of weapons. And it's just like, where's the positive? Even if they survive this, the end of the season is going to be tough too. So it's like, they don't have like that traditional Patriots stretch where they have like 6 weeks of just mid teams where they can beat. They're 1-3 and they have to play the Bills and Dolphins in a couple of weeks. And that, it's just, I'm already in the tank. I'm already supporting the tank because if they start losing games, it's more likely Bill's gone. And if you want Bill gone, this is it. Also, the quarterback draft class is very deep. If you're watching college football every week and you're seeing all these quarterbacks just go off, it's enticing. It is. So I'm saying get a pie as big as possible.
Okay. So Fiesta's fully embracing it. Maddie, I'm assuming by the head nod, you're embracing the tank too.
I'm embracing it because I can't trust this team to win a game. Like I said, they have two more wins, maybe three at most this year, based on what I've seen so far. It's tough to trust them.
Okay. So I'm not fully on the tank team yet, but if they lose Sunday...
Join us out.
Listen, Fiesta, if they lose on Sunday, I'm fully on it. They lose on Sunday, dropped 1-4. I'm like, you know what? Just forget 2023. You've already lost Judon probably for the rest of the year, if not close to it. Christian Gonzalez, who knows how long he's going to be out for. So guess what? They lose on Sunday, I'm fully on it. I would say right now for the tank train, I'm about 75% on with like, I'm about to fully like go for it, but I'm not fully ready to be invested yet. So let's get into the actual preview of the game. Again, just talking about the Saints. It's going to be an ugly game. It's like Fiesta said, it's going to be a battle of defenses. It's going to be a battle of which offenses can actually put together two or three drives during the game. So, honestly, let's just do score predictions because I'm getting tired of talking about this team because this team isn't worth as much time as we're giving them, but we have to talk about it. So, score prediction, who wins? I'll go first. And maybe it's just because I want something to be hopeful for. I'm going to say Patriots 21-17 over the Saints. It's going to be ugly. I don't know how they're going to get to 21 points. They'll probably get like a pick six or a scoop and score. But it's going to be ugly, and they're going to probably win it with a stop late in the game. So give me Patriots 21-17 over the Saints. Whoever wants it next, go for it.
Fiesta, go for it.
Honestly, I've watched a lot of Saints football this year. They're bad, too, on offense. This is going to be a 16-9 game. I do think somehow this group does respond well. Unfortunately, they're going to win this week, and then they're going to probably drop you. That's getting up, and I got
the Patriots. All right, so
I don't want to.
I know. It's hard. So Fiesta's got Patriots 16-9. Maddie?
I've got 17-6 New Orleans. I do not think the Patriots even win again this week. The Saints defense is giving up 19 points per game this year. Patriots on average are scoring 13 this year. I don't think this offense does well against the Saints defense. I don't. But at the same time, the only reason why I say 17 points for New Orleans, what are we going to look like without Judon? What do we look like now in the secondary without, I'm going to say it, our top cornerback at the moment, since Jonathan Jones is still not healthy. So,
yeah. Hopefully they're
especially now with Miles Bryant being our number one cornerback, by the way.
Hopefully Jack Jones is back off the IR this week. Hopefully that can help him. Hopefully he's off the IR. Hopefully that helps. Yeah. And then, you know, if Jonathan Jones can get healthy, then at least you get two corners back that you're comfortable with. Because I agree with you, Miles Bryant, number one corner, I don't love that at all. But
especially with a guy like Taysom Hill, who's a unicorn for that team, can do it all. And Belichick does not do well against guys who can do it all.
Very true. Fiesta, do you have any final thoughts on the Patriots before we kind of segue?
No.
Okay.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Maddie. I don't know the crappy Boston team. But...
All right. So we'll talk about the team that's on Matty Burnett's head. It is the Boston Red Sox. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to make a little off-season plan on how to improve the Red Sox. Each of us are going to do one move each to improve this team. I got Liam and Powder's answers as well. Before we do that, we have to talk about it. The passing of a legend, Tim Wakefield, passing away at the age of 57. The knuckleballer, the guy that helped you win two World Series titles, a class act all the way. Really just an absolute shame. Like, this one actually shook me. Like, hearing this, I actually got goosebumps. Like, a chill went up my spine. And it was just, like, I felt gross about myself knowing that this was happening, because it's like, you grew up with Tim Wakefield. He was one of those guys you grew up watching in the early to mid-2000s for that Red Sox team. And you know what? For Curt Schilling to be the one to break it, like, that just, that leaves a pit in your stomach, too. You're just like, ugh. You had to find out that way. Like, you couldn't just find out from the family directly or anything like that. So, you know, Curt Schilling, loved him as a player, but afterwards, but again, just rest in peace to a Red Sox legend, Tim Wakefield. I don't know if there's any words you guys want to say about it, but again, just an absolute class act from everything I've ever heard about people that talk about him and interact.
Well, I have a quick story.
Please.
My first ever Red Sox game was the Doug Marabelli game.
Oh, the one where he had to rush to the...
Yeah. We got the police escort. Wakefield was on the mound. That's just how he pitched great that night. It was a memorable night. Yeah, Wakefield is just helped the team, but he made Boston home and did a lot. He was an unselfish player in a time where I think that we've been removed so long enough. In a time in Boston where it was just like the Wolves were out. They were trying to win a World Series for a long time especially those years in the mid to late 90s and then in the 2000s. It was just a dog-eat-dog world. You never heard anything bad about him. Especially in the pressure cooker that Boston is, in that sense. It's just, Al, you said it best. And kind of, when you heard the diagnosis and then this happening, it was shocking. It happened very quick. Just basically, especially the how some former players, his teammates were saying that they were talking to him like last week or a couple of weeks ago. So I know this caught a lot of people off guard. But yeah, his stuff, his charitable stuff, should be commended. His devotion to the Jimmy Fund and everything else should be a standard that all players should go by. And it's just his selflessness as a player, putting the team first always. It is that. So he is a Red Sox legend. It's one of those, and it's sad. We lost one of the good guys on Sunday. We lost one of the good guys for sure. I don't want to talk about Curt Schilling. He's a scumbag. I have other words I could say about him. But I mean, Curt Schilling's opinion among the public is low. But I think this, it's for a lot of other reasons. But I think that the Red Sox should cut ties with him just completely. And I think that he needs completely. And I know this is going to be a difficult process to do because we are heading into the 20th anniversary of World War. But I don't want Curt Schilling to be associated with that at all, for just a number of reasons, but this one being the at the top of the list.
Matty?
I mean, it's impossible to talk about the Red Sox and not mention him. I was fortunate to see him pitch twice, growing up going to Red Sox games every now and then, and, you know, living on the Cape and stuff. I lived so far from Boston that if I was planning to go to a Red Sox game, one, it had to be an afternoon game, and two, it was a whole day affair, just because, again, over an hour to there and back each way, basically. And at the same time, something cool that I think that will forever be, will literally will be forever be history for the Red Sox, and also not in the MLB anymore, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but when he got his 200th win in 2011 in September, he was the oldest. I don't know if anyone was older since then. Any pitcher was older than him, but he was the oldest at the time. I don't know, again, age, but and to retire the last six batters yourself to do that, probably outside of World Series wins and Ortiz's speech about what happened after the marathon bombings, probably one of the most iconic moments in Red Sox history was seeing him do that himself. The last six batters, he handled it himself. And it's a moment that I don't think is talked about enough. Because whenever you see a 200th win, typically it's, all right, a pop fly or whatever, or something like that. He retired the last six batters himself.
Pretty insane. Yeah. And then it's just, again, it's just value life. I know it's going to sound cheesy, but value all the time you can, because you never know when it can be taken from you just like that. And obviously, love Tim Wakefield. I hope that, you know, when they do the celebration next year for the 20th anniversary of 04, that they commemorate the season to him and just, you know, give him a proper send.
They're absolutely going to do that.
Oh, for sure. No doubt about it.
It wouldn't surprise me if 49 was in the grass or something next year.
And I would love like that.
In the outfield.
Listen, I would love every single second.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We got the tough part out of the way. Let's do an off-season plan. I am going to read Powder and Liam's first, so that way we can have some different ideas. So Powder, I'm going to call it Powder. I love you to death. You know that, but I'm calling it a square pick. He said, go out and sign Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And that's the name that a lot of people have been, you know, hammering home, right? You know, looks like the next stud Japanese pitcher to come over to the MLB. So again, a move that I expected someone to say. So I figured, you know, if it was NBA one, it's going to be Powder, but smart baseball mind. I love that. Liam had an interesting one. He said, try to get Josh Hader from the Padres. That's kind of like a dream for him. But that would be cool. A lefty in the bullpen, a solid lefty. I would love that. I'll go next, and I'll keep mine short and brief because this is a need that is more than just one player at the position. For another starting pitcher, I think you need to go out and get either one of Blake Snell or Aaron Nola. Go out and get a solidified number two, a guy that can actually come in here and help kind of anchor the top of the rotation, because let's face it, Chris Sale is not going to do it. Brian Bayo is a nice piece, but I think he's a couple of years away from being a true ace, but can still make a significant contribution next year to your starting rotation. And then, you know, you get that bona fide number one. You got to sign at least a couple starting pitchers this offseason. Why not start off with either Snell or Nola? I'd be fine with either one. So first part of the plan, sign Yamamoto. Second part, sign Hader. Third part, sign Snell or Nola. What's the fourth part of the plan? Who wants to...
I'll go. I mean, like, I have another pitcher. That my thing was pitching as well. It's a common theme, I feel like. Even though he had a down year because, you know, he did play for three teams this year. Someone that I think needs to be looked at too is Lucas Giolito. I wouldn't hate it. Yeah, he had, you know, not the greatest ERA out in Cleveland this year when he got traded there with a, you know, 7.04 ERA. Bad, but he's still good. I think he's still good. He was pretty good in Washington. Jeez, he was pretty good. Well, he did play in Washington, but he was pretty good in Chicago. I think, you know, could he be a number two? Maybe. If you lose out on Nola, if you lose out on Snell, go get Giolito, because I don't think he'll be too expensive.
Okay, so fourth part of the plan, sign Lucas Giolito. Okay. Fiesta, round us up. What's the last part of the plan?
Oh, this should be number one. And I'm not because I'm cocky or anything. It's just, this should be number one. Star power. Anything. And I'm talking whether it is, I mean, I was going to say pitching as well, but it's like, it's either getting elite pitching, trading it, or going all in on Ohtani, or going all in to get Soto, or
maybe even just calling the Angels about Mike Trout, like something star power to gravitate, like stars, like putting people in the seats at Fenway Park. I'm a season ticket holder. I want a good team. And I'll tell you this because of that. Red Sox were kind of begging people to get season tickets this year. But I was a little wined and dying. I'm not going to lie. So I was a little wined and dying on offers of choice for seating. I want a good team. They need star power. They have a young core. Bring stars in. Spend money. That's star. I'll say stars / spend money prospects. Like do something big, because it feels like they're gonna go after pitching, but it's that third element, that third thing. When there's gonna be multiple stars on the market that are from Ohtani to maybe Trout to Soto, like as examples, maybe even more. Who knows? That's gonna be the moment because I think we could agree they're gonna go after pitching. There's too much smoke there. Stars, and it's time to pony up.
But I'll give just general star power. Yes. Let me ask you this real quick. Yes or no? Do you think like Yamamoto or Snell or Nola is that star power?
Snell, I would say yes. And I would say Yamamoto internationally, yes.
Not Nola. I think we can agree, not Nola.
Yeah, not Nola. Nola is like a good two at this stage in his career. He's a good two number two starter. Yeah. But yeah, no. I think that Snell, I mean, Snell's about to win the second Cy Young.
Exactly.
So yeah, so it's like that is a name people are gonna recognize. And I mean Yamamoto is just like, I mean, he was teammates with, he knows Yoshida very well, so it's like star power, and just the international attention would mean something, but that would fit under that. Just star power, spend money. It's like, yeah, that's it. You got to have money to spend before you reach the luxury thresholds. So spend money, get talent, superstar talent.
Here's a name. You guys ready for this name? Juan Soto. That'd be a fun little name.
I'd be fine with that.
I know. I mentioned it. It's like, and that's going to be the significant thing. If you're trading for him, you're signing him to one of the largest contracts in history. Right after.
I mean, you better.
Yeah. I would say this. If you had a lineup that consisted of the middle of the order of, Devers, Casas, Soto, Trevor Story, and like figure out the rest. You're very good. It's scary.
So there you go, future chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox. There's your plan, right there. Follow that to a T. Go get the players. Make baseball relevant in Boston again.
I got one other name maybe to throw out there for star power. This name will definitely put ass in seats too. Cody Bellinger.
Okay.
Wouldn't hate it. I would not hate that.
I'll tell you what. I think.
I don't think it's happening.
And Fiesta, tell me if I'm wrong here. I feel like Cody Bellinger would be a good addition, but I don't know if he's that splash.
If this was Cody Bellinger, like 2018.
Right. Like Dodgers.
I would agree with what Matt's saying. He had some down years, and this year he rebounded, and he's going to get paid this winter. And I'm going to be honest, it's not going to be here. It's going to be to your rival, New York. New York's going to probably give him the contract.
Probably.
Because they need that lefty power bat in the lineup behind Stanton. Because I'm already envisioning him in a Yankee uniform just hitting cheap shots of that short porch. It's already in my mind. So I've already been convinced. But no, it's like, Yamamoto, you were mentioning, Snell, Ohtani. If you really want to get in that sweepstakes and go all that, it's like you just make a big trade like Soto, or even if Mike Trout says, you know what, I want to go back to the East Coast. Like, that's a big name. That puts butts in seats. And that puts not that puts your own fans' butts in seats, not other fans from other fan bases.
Right. Exactly. So hopefully they do some things this offseason. It's going to be interesting to see what they actually do. But again, it's a wait and see type of game. All right. We'll get into some Celtics to kind of finish everything up. But before we do that, we have to give a shout out to our sponsor, A&B Kitchen Bar, A&B Burgers. Whether you are in Boston, Mass, or Beverly, Mass, make sure to check out all the great deals that are going on at A&B Kitchen Bar or A&B Burgers. From obviously their burgers to their pasta and every other dish that they have there. Great drinks, great staff, incredible people. You can go to the one in Boston and it's like you're at the game without actually being at the game. So again, shout out to our friends at A&B Kitchen Bar, A&B Burgers. Tell them the Legends Boys sent you while they're at it.
Hell yeah. Al, are we doing any MLB postseason predictions, or are we gonna say that for when Powder comes back?
Real quick, we'll just do this real fast before we get into some Celtics. Who's the team that you guys are gonna support throughout the postseason? We won't do a full breakdown. We'll just do a team we're kind of bandwagoning on. I got Powders. He's doing the Phillies. And then Liam's doing the Braves. Is there a team you guys are going to be rooting hard for?
I'm going Baltimore. I'm going Orioles. I want them to go all the way this year.
I'm going with the Los Angeles Red Sox.
Oh, that's the Fiesta-like answer. I remember Aaron
Walker. Oh, that's great. That is fantastic.
The Los Angeles Red Sox, yeah, the Dodgers. I mean, basically, they have... every Red Sox, former Red Sox, can keep a career with the team. So it's like, all right, get on. So I'll go with the Dodgers to be different. They're just on another class. Same with the Braves. So it's one of those.
But no, they are in another class. It's just crazy how much they've been winning. Them, the Braves this year, have just been like a two-horse race in the National League. Maddie, I'm jumping on the bandwagon with you. We can be best buddies.
Oh, I got to jump off then.
Come with me, Mac. Come with me.
I'll stay with the Orioles. I'll stay with the Orioles.
No, but the Orioles are so much fun to watch.
So long. I'm so happy for them, finally.
They're so much fun to watch. They have a good combination of young talent that's been developed. Obviously, they had some high draft picks for that to happen. They've added the right pieces in place. So, you know what? I'm good with it. I'm happy with it. So, let's see how well this Orioles team can do, and let's see how far they go.
God, I can't wait for Houston to beat them, and we're all mad at Houston again. I can't wait.
Yeah. One team we can't be mad at, though, is the Boston Celtics, because the Boston Celtics, gentlemen, their preseason starts in like 5 days, which is five or 6 days. And guess what? The Celtics are going all in this year. So let's break down the big trade that happened. Obviously, so first, just a little context. So the Milwaukee Bucks made a big trade. They traded for Portland Trailblazers star guard Damian Lillard, sent the big package over to Portland, and part of that trade was Drew Holiday was in the trade. He went over to Portland. But now, Drew Holiday is a member of your Boston Celtics because Brad Stevens has done it again. So Brad Stevens has sent to the Portland Trailblazers center Robert Williams, guard Malcolm Brogdon, and I believe it's two first-round picks, one of them being the Golden State first-round pick that he got in the Marcus Smart and Kristaps Porzingis trade. Overall, on the surface, when you actually break it down, I truly love this trade. Because you're sending, yes, Robert Williams, fan favorite. A lot of people love him. I love them too. Obviously, we know what he can do defensively, but he just couldn't stay on the court. Like, that's a big thing. The best ability is availability, and you had to monitor him, and you had to monitor minutes, especially when he came back for the playoff runs, and it sucked. Like, you see Rob's talent. He's going to be a force in this league if he stays healthy. And then for Malcolm Brogdon, I mean, he was almost traded once to the Clippers earlier in the offseason. The relationship kind of soured with him and the organization, so you knew at some point he was going to be gone, even though Brad's like, yep, Malcolm could feel that way. We've tried to repair the relationship. Like, we're doing what we can. You know, all that stuff. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but you're getting somebody that is better offensively than Marcus Smart. Like, let's just call it like it is. Holiday is a better scorer than Marcus Smart consistently across the board. And he's pretty damn good defensively, too. Is he as good as Smart in his defensive player of the year? You know, you're probably not, but he's one of the best perimeter guards. Even Damian Lillard said, that he thinks Drew Holiday is one of the best perimeter guards in the NBA. So you're getting that, and now you can roll out a starting five of depending what you want to do. If you want to go with one big, you can go Drew Holiday, Derek White, the Jays, and Kristaps Porzingis. Or if you want to go two bigs, you can go Drew Holiday, the Jays, Al Horford, and Kristaps Porzingis. Either one is fine, and then you either have Derek White or Al Horford coming off the bench. You still have two good shooters in Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser coming off the bench. Obviously, you'd like to see maybe another big in there. Like Luke Kornet, fine backup for the regular season, but come playoff time, you're kind of going to need that backup big that can give you some minutes. But overall, guys, credit to Brad Stevens because he's going for it. And he knows that this is the year that they got to try to do it, either this year or next year. And he's pushing all of his chips into the middle of the table. So I love the trade. I think Drew Holiday is going to be a great fit here in Boston. I think the fans are going to love him immediately. But I want to hear your guys' thoughts. Are you as high on this trade as I am, or are you a little bit more cautious about it? Whoever wants it.
I'll go first. I'm excited for Holiday. It's just the bigs now do concern me. That's the thing. I'm stoked that we did get Holiday. We got someone who is, you know, he's pretty damn good on offense, if I do say so myself. I think he's going to correlate well with both Brown and Tatum, especially Tatum, because, you know, Holiday, he can pass the ball pretty damn well, too. It's just that your bigs are now Kristaps Porzingis and Al Horford. And, yes, you got Sam Kornet, another name that I think Celtics fans should keep an eye on throughout training camp and preseason and all that is Wenyen Gabriel. He's someone that just to keep an eye on. He's just a seven-foot freak. That's basically what he is. He's not the most athletically gifted center in the league, but he's a name to keep an eye on. But it's just I'm cautiously excited just because, again, the bigs situation, but at the same time, as Celtics fans for the past couple of years now, we are used to having our starting center being on the bench because he's not on the court because of injury. That's all I got.
Whoops. I was muted there. I think you've been there, Al. No, the bigs are definitely a concern, like going into your bench, and hopefully Horford, you're going to probably, you know, load manage throughout the season, especially with those back-to-backs like you did last year. Kristaps, you got to make sure he's healthy, but go ahead, Fiesta. What do you got?
I'm all in. I am all in. This was the trade that you needed to make. At the end of the day, you had a bold off season. You bolstered the staff. You traded for Porzingis. I know that there's injury concerns, but I feel like his game is evolving now, where he's just a smarter player in that regard, and that he's going to be doing certain things, and it's not going to be as prevalent. He'll probably still get banged up, but it's not going to be, like, devastating in that. But, yeah, no, you have probably the best lineup in basketball, top six, definitely in basketball. You have a super team. Let's call it what it is. You have three all-stars from last year. So, that were all-stars. You have an all-defensive guard, two all-defensive guards, Holiday and Derek White. And you have an all-star caliber player, Kristaps Porzingis. You have a loaded team. And Al Horford's your sixth man. Like, and your bench isn't bad either. You have shooters. You have Hauser. You have Pritchard, who can give you regular season minutes. Lamar Stevenson, that can give you that defensive grit, like Grant Williams. You have other guys that are going to contribute. I'm all in. If they can stay healthy and there's health and everything else, this team's going to win 60-plus games. Like, I'm putting it on the record. This is a Fiesta bold take guarantee, like the old days, Al. Like the old days. This team, if they stay healthy.
Throwback.
This is a 60-win team if they are healthy. 60-plus win team. They have everything. They're going to cruise. Because now you look at it, just based on the last fourth quarter lineup, is going to be intelligent, smart. If anybody can get a bucket, so it's not going to put pressure. So teams aren't going to gang up on Jason Tatum, double him, and you're going to see like Marcus Smart chuck threes. It's going to be, all right, do we really want to? All right, if we double Tatum, Porzingis is going to either be on. Jalen's going to be on. And I think all of us trust White and Drew to make the shot. if they're open. So it's like, there's so many options. They can get guys in the playoff game. There's four guys now. They can get a bucket. You have plenty of shooting still. It puts a little less pressure on Tatum, so you don't have him wear down. That's also the biggest news out of this. You have guys that can contribute. I'm all in. I can't wait till Bucks, Celtics. That's the Eastern Conference Finals. I do want to point out this. The last time that Jrue Holiday and Dame played in the playoffs against each other, I would look this up, folks. Jrue Holiday locked up Dame Lillard and made Dame's life a nightmare. I know that it's years later, they're older players, but Jrue Holiday's going to be out for blood. Again, Milwaukee being a great trade. They should do that. They probably have the best duo in basketball in Giannis and Dame. It's a natural fit. But Jrue Holiday going to the Celtics might be the Bucks' worst nightmare in that sense.
I know. And let's think about this, right? And let's just talk lineups for a second, okay? Jrue Holiday or Damian Lillard, you might give the advantage to Lillard, maybe, but honestly...
No, you do.
But it's not by as big of a margin as you might think. Like, yes, Damian Lillard is a really talented player. Jrue Holiday, again, very, very talented as well. So fine, give the advantage to the Bucks. Pat Connaughton or Derek White? I'm taking Derek White. I love Pat Connaughton, local guy. You know, he's improved with his, you know, three-point shooting and everything, but Derek White's just a complete player. So one-to-one there. Chris Middleton or Jason Tatum? Jason Tatum, duh. Like, that's obvious because Chris Middleton's been injury-prone the last couple of years. Then you take a look at Giannis against Jalen Brown yet? I don't think I did, right?
I didn't say
Jalen Brown. I'm sorry. So, yeah, let's do this, right? Let's do Middleton against Brown. I'll take Jalen Brown. I will take Jalen Brown over Chris Middleton because Chris Middleton, again, can't stay healthy. Now, Giannis and Tatum? I mean...
So it's like in this scenario you're mentioning. Milwaukee probably has the first and third best player in the series. Tatum in the middle at second.
Yeah.
But the Celtics have the fourth.
Fifth. And it goes on. Right.
And I think Milwaukee did the right move here. And I'm not going to criticize them. They had to make this move to make Giannis happy. But the rest of the surrounding team is old.
Yeah.
Compared to you, like, it's old. It's like it's still the same core that went to a championship 3 seasons ago. It's like that hasn't changed, and they are a little older. While you, it's like Tatum's 25. Brown's going to be 27 later this month. Porzingis is 27, 28. Derek White's 28, 29. And, I mean, Holiday's 33, 34, and Al's at that sense. But it's like you got a lot of guys in their athletic prime. And even Al and Jrue Holiday, they're in shape.
They are good.
And here's the thing also, because I think you could make an argument before this trade, there were a lot of injury like concerns because Brogdon, Porzingis, and Rob. You had three guys you were relying on for heavy minutes, potentially like, all right, this either is going to go right or wrong. You probably have one of, I knock on wood right now, and it's knock on wood. You probably have one of the more dependable, durable teams in basketball because Jrue Holiday plays over 60 games. I mean, Derek White played all 82 last year, and he plays every night. Jalen plays over 60. You have to force team to take a day off. Al plays when called upon. It's Porzingis is the question, but he played over 65 games last year. So it's like, health. It's just like, hopefully it stays healthy, but you have durability. You have... We don't know about Porzingis yet because we haven't seen well in that stage, but everybody else has toughness. The playthrough stuff. So, again, it's just one of those things. But I'm excited. That Sunday might be one of those days in Boston sports that we're going to remember for a long time because you had the trade, then the surprising news about Wakefield, and then you have the Patriots kind of making people have some uncomfortable conversations. It's one of those days that I think we're going to remember where we were throughout that entire day. But I'm very excited about the Celtics.
I am too. So can we also agree it's Boston, Milwaukee, and then kind of like everybody else in the East? I know Philly can make a run potentially, but I mean, it's Philly. Hold on. It's Philly. The Celtics, it's just like with the Patriots and the Jets. The Celtics always beat the 76ers in a playoff series. That's not what it is.
Like, James Harden showing up 2 days later, he's probably after for training camp, he's going to show up in a fat suit. This like incoming fat suit season. I don't know. I don't know what's going to be good with the Sixers. Talk about two teams that got effing poached in, like, this offseason. Like, daggers. Is the Sixers and definitely Miami. Talk about, like, the gap that just happened. It's like, Embiid's tweeting out, well, this offseason was fun. It's like, I could tell, like, he was pissed. You have Jimmy Butler in an emo phase right now.
Oh, that is hilarious.
I know it was a bit, but I can tell it's like, he was pissed last week. He's like, NBA, you gotta look to the Bucks for tampering. And it's like, also, you mentioned another team, the Cavs. They're not probably going to be ready. It's Celtics and Bucks. And it's really, honestly, if you want to talk about the entire NBA, it's Celtics, Bucks, Nuggets, and then
everybody else. Yep.
And I know you're able to get up saying, what about the Suns? What about the Lakers? It's like, yeah, they have talent, but there's legit depth issues. I shouldn't say depth issues. There's concerns about roster structure beyond their stars.
Yes. So, yeah, I'm going to probably put a bet in on the Celtics to win over whatever it is, because Fiesta's saying 60 plus wins, if healthy, yes. But listen,
if you want betting advice, I could give it to you.
All right. So here, before we wrap up, Fiesta, actually, Maddie, do you have anything else on the Jrue Holiday trade or just the Celtics season in general?
I'm just excited for it. I also think they get over 60 wins this year. I agree with what Fiesta said. It's Celtics, Nuggets, Milwaukee, everyone else.
Literally. All right, Fiesta, you obviously are a betting man. You do a betting podcast. So give us one Boston sports bet that we can put in, whether it's Red Sox next year, Patriots for the rest of this year, Celtics this season, Bruins this season. What's one bet that you feel really confident in that you could give out to the people?
A lot. But I will say this in terms of value and everything else. And if they're going to be really good, as we are talking about it, Jason Tatum in sport now, 800 right now, MVP. That is good value because that is fifth behind Jokic, Luka, Giannis, and Embiid. It's good value. It was plus 900 the other day, so depending on what draft book, you might get it wherever you want. But that's good value. I would have liked, before the Jrue Holiday trade, I would have liked Celtics plus 500 in the championship odds because, like, Milwaukee was, like, at 350 or something like that. That was going to be good value there. But Tatum MVP, that's good value. That's good value. Expect a monster season. Maybe a little less than the point scored. I don't think he'll score 30, but everything will be probably a little higher and more efficient, and he'll be very good. So, oh, Tatum plus 800.
I was going to say, Tatum on DraftKings is plus 800. And I'm not going to lie, it looks a little tempting. So you know what? Wait for it. Okay. We're in.
All right.
There you go. It's like Jason Tatum, MVP. Yeah. Don't ever say I don't ride with the Chasers, because I ride with them. I will ride.
No, you do.
I will ride. But anyways, all right. Yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. I mean, so just kind of to wrap things up.
Oh, my God, isn't it freeze at the end?
Oh, did it freeze? Oh, it froze right at the end. Damn. There it is. There it is. Oh,
great.
I think I'm back.
Oh, my God. He's still so behind.
Oh, he's just so behind.
Hey, we were a few. Hey, your internet bill, you jerk. Plug it back in.
Fair. Thank goodness this is the last time that I'm recording in my current situation. I'm going to be hopefully in a much better situation with actual better Wi-Fi instead of this crappy one that I use all the time. But anyways,
I'm gonna tell Marty you said that.
I don't care. Listen, rate and subscribe to the Legends Lingo podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor, and everywhere else where you can get your podcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Lingo Legends, and make sure to follow Matty B at Matthew_Jordan with 3 T's. Fiesta, shout out your pod.
Chasers 617. And my at is at TSF52, and Jones, my other co-host.
He sucks.
C Jones, who 212.
It's a joke. Yeah.
We're all part of, all under the student union umbrella. So be on the lookout for all our content there, and everything else.
Shout out to the Brotherhood of Student Union Sports. Again, check out everything on studentunionsports.com. Again, we have it all covered. Your Boston sports needs, your soccer needs, your betting needs, your college football needs. Everything's taken care of. We'll be back next week, I think, hopefully.
Who knows?
Hopefully my internet will be up and running by then in the new place. So we'll see what happens. But until then, Tom Sam Facette, a.k.a. Fiesta, joining us once again. That's Matty B. I'm your host, Al. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week, hopefully, episode 242. Yes, sir.